Hey, Nana Visitor here, and this is the Shuttle Pod Show.
Now, I figured out, okay, dye your hair dark and you're a vixen and probably the one who murdered the person. Dye your hair blonde and you're the one who gets murdered. But either way, I kept working, you know?
Gonna go and do my convention thing. Got my costume, I'm going now. Yeah, we're having a ball. It's Star Trek, y'all. Hey, Dana,
everyone, welcome to another episode of Shuttle Pod Show. Today we have very special guest, Nana Visitor. We'll be answering some of your fan questions, doing some Star Trek trivia. Wash got a new pot, so you'll be seeing that, and much more. I'm Erica LaRose, and now for our host, Connor Trenier, and our guest host, Mark Cartier.
Woo!
Hi!
Hey, well, welcome back to 2023.
Yeah.
Or welcome to 2023, as it were.
Oh, that's right. It's our first show back.
That's right.
Oh, happy new year.
Happy new year to you guys. Yeah.
Happy new year.
And it's nice to have drink back with us.
He has a new pot.
I appreciate you putting him in the 9-pound feta cheese pot for,
Well, there's kind of a story to that. You know, everyone on the internet was, all upset about the tiny pot, which Erica has right here. He had outgrown it a long time ago.
Yes.
So, the only thing I had access to the other night was a 9-pound feta cheese bucket.
He Why really do you likes need 9 pounds of feta cheese?
Because we're hoping for 9 pounds of avocado.
Uh-huh. And it's the holidays.
And it's the holidays.
How was your holiday?
It was very feta filled.
Yeah. Very Greek.
Very Greek.
Oh. It was very Italian.
Yeah.
Sicilian, specifically.
Sicilian, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I spent it here in town with it's been raining here oddly for ever, it seems.
Yeah, it really hasn't stopped.
Which we need. But no, it was nice. I was here and then I spent New Year's with my girlfriend in Malibu. I was there for Christmas as well with her and her family. And first time away from my family. So it was nice to.
Oh, Connor.
I know. But it was great. It was great. It was a really nice. A nice Christmas and a nice New Year's. So,
good.
Yeah, and it's good to be back.
Yay. Welcome back.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Treks and Trekkers, welcome to the Shuttle Pod Show. We are once again in the bird's nest of the Matrix Theater as guests of Rogue Machine Theater. Thank you. Thank you. We love our space here. And we are delighted, thrilled, very excited to have the multi-talented Nana Visitor as our guest today.
Thank you, Yay. Connor. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
How was your holiday?
It was really good. Very yeah. calm and quiet and lovely and filled with lots of great things to eat. Just the way I like it.
Perfect.
Did you cook?
Oh, yeah. I cooked a lot.
That's a thing
that's
awesome. You do.
That's, yeah. That's a thing I do. So it was fun. Yeah.
So you were born in New York City.
I was.
To a theatrical family.
Very theatrical.
Right.
I mean at home too, very theatrical. Yeah.
And your parents were, what did they do?
My father, Bob Tucker, was a choreographer. He was associate with Jerry Robbins for years and then Bob Fosse. So he was like, and then he did shows on his own. And my mother was this. She was a ballet teacher, but people didn't just come to her for ballet. Everyone on Broadway came to her for coaching, but also just for the way she taught dance was the way you could live your life, which, and people came to her, they weren't dancers just to get that from
What does
her.
That mean?
That means that she was always ahead of how people were thinking and very much how people look at mindfulness now and body positivity and self-acceptance and compassion and acceptance of diversity. Arthur Mitchell, I just read this, who was a black male dancer who had people go, just give up. You shouldn't be in this. And my mother was like, no, you have to dance. And he talks about her in the book as one of the people who said, stop it. And she always talked about, you know, ballet dancers get dancers in general, especially back then, would be like, you have to look perfect. The Balanchine aesthetic.
Right.
Nothing. And she would just be, pile up your bones, and what sticks out, sticks out. You're human. Dance. Use the energy to dance, to be joyful. And that was like very different from how people taught dance back.
So is that, that's kind of on the cusp of the modern notion of what dance has become, I would imagine. Wow. Were they coming in and out of the apartment, and were you around all of these people all the time?
Well, yes. I grew up sitting there bored out of my mind in dance class because they didn't have a babysitter. So I'd have to sit and I'd be like, why is that dancer better than that dancer? Oh. And it was like, I was watching Gwen Verdon, and why is she better than, you know, it was like, it was every dancer you can imagine. I knew how to dance before I stood up to do it.
Oh, wow.
Because I had just seen so much of it.
Yeah.
And I had this audition with Bob Fosse.
Oh my God.
For what was that huge movie he did that was about his life?
All That Jazz.
All that jazz. So
it's Showtime.
His girlfriend got the role. I wasn't right for it anyway. But I spent about 4 hours, just Bob and me, acting, singing, dancing, talking.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was 17 at the time, something like that. 17. Wow. I'm not sure how old I was. But I know that the things he told me during that time changed how I thought about the business, what I would do, what I wouldn't do. It was very influential.
Wow.
And that's incredible, actually. That's really
when did you then decide that this was for you? The world of the theater and
the world of the theater. You know, I graduated my white glove girls school in Manhattan.
Did it have a great name?
Nightingale?
Nightingale. That's right.
Does have a great name.
That's right. And my parents couldn't afford that school. The only reason I was there is Doris Duke was my mother's best friend and said, I want to send the children to school. And that's how I spent all those years there. So then I got into Princeton, and it was like Princeton chorus girl job, Princeton. And of course I took the chorus girl job and I just kept working. I deferred for a couple of years. And when Princeton was finally like, you know, you do have to like kind of make a decision here. I was like, no, I'm working. And that's what I would have wanted to do anyway. In many ways, just culturally, I wish I had gone to Princeton.
Mm. Oh. Mm.
Just because being a young woman in the business back then, I was so naive. I just didn't understand why it didn't work like in the girls' school.
Right.
What? You're not going to listen to me. I don't have a voice. Wait, you do that to me and I can't say don't.
Mm. Right.
You know?
Right.
And
right.
I think the extra time would have given me the resilience and the maturity to have a little more understanding of all that.
And an independence of mind. And
exactly.
And yeah.
Exactly.
For those who don't know who Doris Duke is.
She was the daughter of Duke Tobacco, and he had at one time all of the tobacco. They had to break up his monopoly on it. And she and I'm not sure who the other one was, but at one time she was one of two of the richest women in the world.
Holy crap!
Right.
And Duke University and
Duke
Energy, all of that stuff.
That's Doris. Right. And she was like an aunt to me growing up.
Wow.
Yeah. She was a cool and interesting and weird woman.
Well, that's fascinating. How did that relationship come to be?
She was a student of my mother's.
Of your mom's.
And then wanted private lessons and then friendship. My mother was this very cool human.
Yeah.
Really unusual. I was lucky to be a student of hers because I knew her as a mother, but then I got to know her as this human and to respect what she did. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. She taught me a lot.
Well, and you, like, we've noticed you on the internet recently, just like trying to look in your background and see what you're doing on social media and things like that to have things to talk about today. We noticed that you're doing a lot of that yourself, your own version of that on
Mama Nana on Instagram.
Yeah.
Inspiring people. Hundreds of video. And what was the impetus for that? Same thing.
It was the pandemic. And it was my, I would hear of anxiety young people were having. And because I struggled with anxiety for so long and other issues, and I had done such a deep dive into understanding, you know, the somatic brain connection. I really did a lot of work. I'm an autodidact in that way. That I got so frustrated going, my God, they just need to know, you know, a few facts about how their nervous systems are working and take it in small bites. And I just started out of frustration. I just went, who knows if anyone's going to hear this? And I just started in every day just so that they knew someone was out there going, it's going to be okay. Right. Here's some ways to handle what we're going through. And now I do it intermittently, but I was doing it every day and I felt I felt compelled to be there for people.
You're like the mindful Leslie Jordan.
I don't know what that means.
Dear Leslie. Yeah. Dear Leslie.
Yeah. So this is actually a great opportunity to say you're here because of your role in Star Trek, and everyone, most of the people watching, not all of them, but most of the people are watching are for that. So you're known for playing Kira Nerys in Star Trek Deep Space Nine for an entire 7 seasons, a Bajoran major who was a rebel, who did not want Starfleet there, but built a relationship with Benjamin Sisko and all the other characters in the show and blah, 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 blah. But one of the things that we love about the show is that we get to actually learn about your real life and talk about things like the fact that you wish you had gone to Princeton and the things, you know, your mom being a great human and a great teacher. So we will get to all the Star Trek stuff, but we'd like to, you know, continue to hear some of these great stories.
Yeah.
Your Mama Nana thing, and that's all awesome.
I was Are you really still doing it? With it?
Yeah.
I kind of... I kind of track it by your hairstyles.
As my hair grows. I know. I know. I don't think I've had that same hairstyle ever. Ever.
I mean, the last time I think I saw you was at the cruise last year. And you had, you know, spiky short hair. And,
yep.
And, you know, I was scrolling down. I was like, well, that was during the cruise period of time. I had short, spiky hair.
I can identify.
And now it's longer. And this is your natural curl.
Yeah. I had done my hair. I wanted to look glamorous today. And then I got wet and it just went.
Oh, the rain, did
yep.
you?
Yep. Yep.
I went natural curl, too, because of the rain.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the Sicilian curl over there.
So what's the first thing you do professionally? And it starts out, you don't do amateur stuff. You go right to the main stages of auditioning for chorus girls and...
Goodspeed Opera House. I was...
No a, way!
Yes! Beautiful oh little theater in East Haddam, Connecticut.
That's right.
And I spent a season dancing there. And that was... Yeah, so I spent years... you know, taking work as a dancer for money. And I loved it. I loved being a chorus girl on Broadway. When people say, is it what I think that job would be? That's the job that I say yes. Acting is not. Acting isn't the glamorous thing.
Oh, God, no.
Right?
Yeah. No.
Dancing on Broadway as a chorus girl in those years was. It was... an amazing life.
Because after the show, you'd go somewhere.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I found out that the bouncer, I got, you know, rejected at Studio 54. I'd go to Studio 54 after the show just to dance, not to do all the other stuff everyone was doing. I just go and dance by myself in the main, you know, the main dance floor. And the music was the best. The people were the most interesting. But I got rejected all the time when I stood in line, you know.
Right.
They just choose the people. So then I went and I left my show makeup on, slicked my hair back, and got a tuxedo. So it was like, what are you?
Yes.
What are you?
Right.
And I got in every
You're
time.
You're for us.
Yes. Yeah.
Welcome.
Yes.
The door is open.
Yeah, come right in. It's like, yes, figure this out.
And are you doing other, you can't really do both things at once, other theater in the meantime, or you were consistently working as a chorus girl, show after show after
well,
show?
Well, I do a show and then I get an acting job and do TV.
You did?
Yeah, I did a series when I was 18. I did soap operas. I did everything you could in New York because I didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Right.
So I did 3 soap operas. I did a series called Ivan the Terrible. It was about a Russian fan. It was like a Russian All in the Family.
With Archie Bunker.
Do you remember Lou Jacoby?
No.
It was starring Lou Jacoby and Maria Karnilova, who were, you know, like, if you were back then, you're a little younger than me, you probably wouldn't know them, but they were like character actors that were in everything.
Right. What was shooting there? I mean, obviously the soap operas were all there, kind of.
Yeah.
Most of them were.
And not that much else.
No.
Not that much else.
Well, we have blown past it now, but I really want to find out why you wanted to stay in New York. You said you wanted to stay in New York.
I was one of those people. There used to be this poster that was a drawing of the United States, and it was New York and then absolutely nothing and then L.A., and I actually thought L.A. didn't matter either. Yeah. New York, why would you be anywhere else?
Center of the world.
Loved the city. I loved the city and I loved the life and I loved Broadway. And I just couldn't imagine. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine. I was 25 before I came out here.
For the first time?
Yeah. And I came out with a show and then stayed.
And never went back?
Never went back.
Well, to live.
Yeah. Yeah. Back. Yeah. If I got other work and all that stuff. But 42nd Street brought me out to the Schubert that used to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just stayed. I did a few pilots and just started working.
Well, what did you think of LA being a lifelong New Yorker? I've talked to many lifelong New Yorkers and they're like, when I got here, I hated this place.
Yeah, it seemed exotic to me and interesting. And probably at 25, I was ready for the change.
Mm.
And having done enough Broadway, I was like, okay, I'm done with that now.
Out of your system a little bit. You felt like you could move on and try some new things.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't. When I got the call about doing Chicago again, I was in my 40s. This was after Star Trek. And I was like, okay.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Put your hat on.
Back to being an athlete, you know, because you are. Yeah, right. Every step of the day, you have to think about what you're doing so you have the energy for the night.
What was it like doing Chicago? Was it the day after 9/11 or on 9/11?
Yeah, it was the day after Giuliani said, nobody on Broadway. The day after, and then the next day we were called back, and it was really interesting. It actually made me understand what we do, because my son Buster, I remember he was about 6 years old, and I don't know why he said this, but he went, but Mama, you're an entertainer. And I went, oh God, I don't know. It sounded like I'm a vaudevillian. Da, 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 da. Right. And what kind of life am I leading? I'm an entertainer. So that was in my mind where I was a little wild-eyed about my purpose in life. But then when the boys used to come with me to the horror of the company manager, used to come with me to my and sit in my dressing room, and sometimes the guys would take them up in the flies. And, so yeah, they were little theater rats. And that day, I went. I have to do this alone. They're not coming with me because we didn't know what was coming next.
Right.
And we figured we might be hit. So it was like, okay, wait a minute. I'm going to work and I think I might die doing right. so. Why? And it was the 200 to 300 people sitting in this theater. And it was like, in order for the city to stand back up, for everything to start going again, we had to make it okay. And if we're on stage being silly, it's okay.
Yeah.
And yeah. that's when my purposefulness, being a storyteller, started to enter my mind as what I really do. And that shift changed a lot of things. Wow. But it was hard. You know, we're talking about murder and mayhem.
Yeah.
And they're looking at us going, this is awful. It was right. It was hard.
So you hit the ground running in LA, and did it go well out of the gate?
Yeah, I figured out. You know, I figured out. Okay, dye your hair dark, and you're a vixen, and probably the one who murdered the person. Dye your hair blonde, and you're the one who gets murdered. But either way, I kept working. You know.
And damn it, I wanted to be the murderer.
That's really funny.
And then, so I've always wondered this too. Like, you did some pilots, right?
Oh, yeah.
Were there any that you, well, two things. Were there any that you started and went like, oh no, this is not, this is, oh, and were there,
oh, yes. one,
or were there, and were there ones oh, that you were like,
I wish it had gone.
This is it. This is.
Yeah. No, none that I went, this is it. One I wished had gone. The creator of, before he created The X-Files, wrote this sitcom called Meet the Munsies, which is just not a great name. It's just not a great name. But I was the star of this half-hour pilot. And she was like Born Yesterday, the character from Born Yesterday.
Right.
And it was a delight to do that. Then I did one that was about a talking cat, but they didn't have any kind of way to make the movement work like they do now. There was right. they just didn't have the wherewithal. And the cat, you know, it would just kind of blur out when the cat spoke. And it was horrible. It was a horrible show. It was like, oh my God, this is, I've, you know, like ladies and gentlemen. Cat? No, it was a real cat that just, you know.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. It was this talking cat.
Oh, did they put peanut butter in its mouth or something?
Yeah, no. It would just be sitting there and then they just blurred the mouth out and tried to do, it was.
Oh Jesus.
Wow.
Creepy a little.
It was creepy and awful. And it was, you know. I was playing the mother and wife who's like, what are you doing? Kind of thing. That's what I needed to do. And it was like, oh my God, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the end of my career.
Oh, no. At least I can dance.
Speaking of that, the one time I lied about my abilities was for the Colbys, which was a spinoff of Dynasty. Oh, yeah. And they wanted someone who could do point work. Now, I was quite a few years away from having done point work. And I said yes. And within a week, I'd lost some toenails.
Oh, my God.
But I did it. And I look at the pictures. It's like, you are barely on that thing. But, you know, I did the job. But, oh God,
never again.
Never again. I won't lie anymore about my abilities.
God, when you're young, it's like, you know, can you ride a horse? Yes, I can ride a horse and play the violin at the same time.
Well,
you're
ride a
told
horse.
To do that.
Exactly.
You're told to lie.
Say yes and learn it.
That's right.
Sometimes you have 3 hours.
Yeah.
Or a week to get back on point.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
I once said I could speak fluent Spanish, so I did a whole, I just learned it all. and said it, but I didn't know what it was saying.
Oh, you just memorized.
Oh, my
but
God.
But that's amazing.
Yeah.
It was
good for you. No, it gives me anxiety even thinking about the lying. Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're going to get found out.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that's to just the acting stuff, but then to, you know, and be on a set and new people, but then to go, okay, I got to get on this horse.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't know how.
Oh, God.
So you do guest star stuff. You do a few pilots.
Yeah. I do a lot of guest star.
Yeah.
A lot.
Any theater in town? No.
Here and there, little things that I've forgotten. One thing that I did was for Aaron Spelling, and it was called The Ladies' Room. And that was actually a bit of a phenomenon at the time. It was, you know, the Lisa Kudrow character that they had for a movie of that. That was from that play.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He produced a play. Aaron Spelling did.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
at what was the Princess Theater?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And there were a lot of interesting actresses as well as Lisa. In the cast, really interesting, strong, all women, one man.
Wow.
Well, we decided that you had never done a show here at the Matrix Theater.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the Matrix. It was further down on Melrose.
Oh, at the old, there's that little theater row.
Yes, yes.
Right, yep. Right. So then how does Deep Space Nine come into your life?
I'm auditioning, and I auditioned for L.A. Law, and I wanted it so badly, so badly. That was like, for a woman back then to be playing a lawyer, it was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Finally, great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I want that. And she was like, you're not going to get, Junie Lowry was casting, and she said, you're not going to, when I went out the door, I remember her in the doorway going, you're not going to get this, but there's something I'm going to call you in on. And I got the script for DS9, and it was probably like four things that I was auditioning for in the day. I mean, literally, I would pack my car with outfits for the day.
Right.
Oh, for the auditions.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, oh, I called my manager, said, you made a mistake. This is written for a man. This isn't, and you know, no. It's a woman. They're asking for a woman. I was like, what? Oh, my God. What?
It's a good thing my hair is dark.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't believe it, and I couldn't wait. Couldn't wait.
What was your audition process like?
I remember two of them. One was for a few people, then one was for the crowded room. And that was it. It wasn't extensive.
Wow.
Yeah, Connor had like nine.
I had six.
Six.
Mm. Jonathan Frakes, I think, had...
He had like nine. 11 or nine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Renee, I understand, had a lot.
Renee?
Yeah, really? Yeah.
He was already Renee.
I know, he was Renee. I don't think it had anything to do with that. I really think that they were looking for... trying to figure out the elements that they wanted to use, how to put the puzzle together. Yeah. I don't think it was like, you know, oh, I only had two auditions. I was a better actor.
Let's
no.
torture this one. We're not really sure.
Yeah. 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 I don't think it was that. It's it's that
what it is.
Yeah. I didn't know it, but I came in very much like Michelle Forbes, who, of course, was supposed to do the role. That's who they wrote it for.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then she wanted to have a film career and didn't want to go heavy. You know, back then, remember, 7 years was like, oh, no, I want to be an actor.
Yeah.
Now right. It's like,
please.
I want to be an actor.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
Well, we skipped right over MacGyver to Star Trek.
Oh, MacGyver. Oh,
yeah.
MacGyver.
Let's MacGyver it.
One of the questions on Twitter for you was about, please tell us about your time on MacGyver. And I was like, oh my God, you were on MacGyver.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get off of Star Trek
because we've got all
here, but MacGyver.
But you know, MacGyver was like, it was really action adventure. And when you did those shows, it was a little, I mean, I did one about fires, oil fires, and, you know, being coated down with, you know,
all that stuff,
fire repellent, or falling, having to run through this, I don't know how, I went this far into the lake and it was probably, I don't know, like 60 feet in, but I fell and, you know, you go, what's in this water?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Right.
It's like, and
actor cream.
Yeah. And it's just like, you do it.
You,
and I never thought of myself as action adventure, run through the lake or the fire and go, oh God, you know,
right.
That's hot.
My ears.
Yes, really.
How did it look?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's,
right.
Boy, you know, the last time I did that was on Wildfire, a show I did with a bunch of horses. And I did some minor stunts with these racehorses that they had agitated, which is
on purpose.
They had agitated on purpose because it was supposed to look like a stampede.
Right.
And my character falls back. So my head, there's nothing between. I mean, we're in New Mexico and we're just doing it. We're just worried about getting the shot.
Right.
And me too. And I remember I got glanced by one of, glanced. I can't tell you what issues I've had because of that.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. And then one of the producers showed me when I came into Loop, he said, I have to show you the footage because I go, and I go, he got me. And as I go like this, his back feet go like that, right where my head was.
Oh, God.
Man.
And, but I got up and went, did you get the shot?
Right.
Oh,
the last time. I won't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I have to say, actors are resilient animals. Like, I have seen some actors do some incredible, completely inappropriately unsafe things and do exactly that. Did you get the shot?
And well, you know, it's...
What is it? Why?
Why?
I mean, and it has to be more than just like a producer or a director is asking you to. Like.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a whole state of mind. Of whatever this is that we're doing together, I want to be a part of making it happen.
Mm.
We are all collaborating, and that it's just my part of it. It's like, did I do that part? Did we get it?
Yeah, when there's 70 people standing there looking at
you. Yeah.
And there's an energy to that, too. Yeah. And if you break that energy by saying, I'm sorry, we're going to have to figure this out
because
I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it breaks... There was one time for me as well where I was actually on our show where on a Friday, we didn't have enough time to shoot what was going to be a swamp, me jumping into a swamp. And Monday, it was an actual swamp, smelled like it. And I would at that point just went, but this is what happens. I said, I'm not doing that. Like,
but says in the script, we have to.
Yeah, it says right here that
it's on page 12.
Jumps into the swamp. And I was like, okay, but I'm not doing that. We have to figure out something else. So, you know, a couple hours go by where they're trying to figure something else out.
And you know how much that's costing.
You know so clearly how much that's costing. And then ultimately, they called in my stunt guy.
And he was like, I'll jump in there.
I'll do it, whatever. I was like, all right, God bless you, man. I'm not going to do it. You know, because look, nobody knows whatever. I've got ear problems.
Oh, yeah. You want some bacteria.
No. So, but, you know, you see that you're part of this machine putting something together. And this machine in itself is setting up for you to be the one to succeed in it.
Yeah. You're the one who gets the accolade when it succeeds.
Right. You know, and if you don't succeed, there's a different vibe than say, we got to go again. We got something wrong with the light of the camera. Did something fluey. You just kind of go like, oh, all right, we're going to go again. But if you don't do it or can't do it, it's embarrassing and shameful. At least I've felt that way before.
Yeah, again, it's 75 people standing there looking at you.
Yeah.
And the dark part of it, too, is this attitude, I don't know if it's changed, of there are 10 more behind you. You don't want to do something? we'll get another actor. I was constantly, when they renegotiated my contract, they used, there'll be a shuttle pod accident.
Oh, no way. My God.
They said that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was heartwarming when a shuttle pod accident actually caused me to keep my job, because they made a reason why I was pregnant.
Oh,
And so it was like, thank you, writers. They made shuttle pod not a you know, traumatic trigger for me.
Right. Right.
Shuttle pod is a traumatic trigger for me.
I don't know how you get pregnant on a shuttle pod accident. So that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah. Well, if Dr. Bashir is involved, see, he takes the he takes the baby from one person and
Miles O'Brien's
wife. Of course.
Yeah.
Keiko
couldn't carry it. So I could. That's how that
they
worked.
Put the human baby into the Bajoran rebel major. She carried O'Brien's baby. That's actually a really fun series of episodes where you're carrying Miles O'Brien's baby.
Very interesting.
You didn't have to walk around with a potted plant when you were pregnant?
No, I was big and proud.
Yeah.
I was 60 pounds bigger and out there.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
In the jumpsuit?
No. No, although, you know, I would have done that too. Yeah. It's like, yeah, this is what a pregnant woman looks like. No, they gave me a little shift.
Like a muumuu uniform.
A little bit of a. So that I could grow. And then after I had Django, they kept me in it and patted me for a while. Give me a moment before they put me back in the orange stretch.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you guys know that Deep Space Nine, was it just you were doing episode one of the series, or were you having to be picked up as a series?
We were told this is 7 year guarantee. This is it. Yeah. There's no way this isn't going to go, but I never, you know, I came from Broadway and guesting, and it's you look for the 2 week notice to go up. And I always thought I could get fired, especially since I was in territory that I had never been allowed to do as a woman. Or behave like.
Yeah.
That I thought, hey, I'm going to go too far and they're going to fire me.
Right.
You know.
Were you number two on the call list?
Yeah.
On the call sheet? Did you have any information besides in your audition, just your scenes? Did you have a pilot script or did you just have your sides?
No, we had the pilot script.
But you did for your audition?
Oh, for the audition? Just for the audition. Oh, no.
Did you have any idea the size of the role that you were playing?
No.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
No, I didn't know she was number two. Nothing. Well,
and so you open up that pilot script and I mean, you're all through it.
Yeah. Yeah. But at that point I was just like, I stopped looking at it from 35,000 feet. It wasn't like, what could this mean for my life? What am I doing? It was just like the work.
Yeah.
The work. 'Cause of course I had a 3 month old baby at the time. So it was just like, stay alive here.
Right. Keep this job.
Yeah.
Wow. And I didn't know you had a 3 month old baby when you started the show.
When you booked Star Trek, you were a mom. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Yeah. My son Buster was 3 months old.
And we just met today for the first time and I didn't know this about you. How weird is that?
Mark.
It's okay. It's okay, Mark. We'll talk later about it.
Did you feel, though, that your character was in your wheelhouse, that you sort of had ownership of it?
Oh.
No?
Yes.
Oh, you did?
You did, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yes. Yeah. It was like being a zoo animal and then being taken out of the zoo and being dropped on a savanna. And it's like, yeah, I know how to run. Let me go. But I kept looking over my shoulder going, you're going to stop this any moment now, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm going back to the zoo.
It's fun, though.
But I'm having fun now.
And then 7 seasons in, you're like, I'm tired of running.
No.
No, you loved it? Oh, so many people are like, it's so exhausting.
Oh, yeah. Seasons. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Literally crazy making. I mean, the lack of sleep.
Fun.
But what?
It's so fun, though.
It's...
Me, anyway.
It's flow state.
You also had a baby.
And then I had two babies. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I kept living life while I did it.
I just mean in the lack of sleep element, it's not as though you were getting to go home and get your great 6 hours.
And the guilt of if I was concentrating on the children, my God, I should be looking over those lines again. If I was at work, but of course I brought the boys to work with me, but it's a skill to be playing pickup sticks in the trailer and then go straight to an emotional scene.
Totally.
And you have to just, you can do it.
Right. Well,
you can do it.
And action.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's fun.
Complete focus completely.
Yeah. Drop in. You just drop right in into this other place.
Did you have any opportunity to sort of give influence outside of just who you are in the character?
I think that's the only influence I had, is who I was, and they started to write for that.
They heard your voice.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
And so it was this, you know, it becomes this material that you can't tell what is what. It's right. Just one thing.
Right.
Major Kira just became one thing, but certainly the opportunities that those writers wrote. Interestingly enough, not a woman writer on the staff.
Well, Deep Space Nine.
Ever.
Wow. Ever. Yeah, ever.
I understand. Never. I understand there never was. Someone said we had two women directors, but I only remember Kim Friedman. Mm. So, yeah, it's. And yet her voice was very, very specific.
Would they ask you, did you have, because we had sort of beginning of the season and then exit interviews with Rick and Brannon? None of that?
We had no contact. Calling a writer was like, oh, we're not supposed to do this. We're not supposed to talk to them.
Why is that?
Really?
It was set up.
They said, do not talk to, somebody came to you and said, you cannot talk to the writers.
It was set up that the writers weren't supposed to come to set. And that's, it was so discouraged for us to call them. Although I did once in a while with issues that I'd have, and most of the time I lost. One I won was Dukat was a Cardassian, you know, the one of the species that dominated my planet.
Right.
And
yeah, he was the leader and of the occupation.
And he was the worst. He was the worst of the worst. And they wanted me to have an affair with him. And I was like,
oh, I've heard this.
Other Cardassians, absolutely not him. Never him. So I actually won that one.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But
I'm glad you won that.
Yeah, yeah, me
as
too.
As a fan of the show, that would have broken some sort of wall that, like.
Right.
Then your character's lifetime of fighting to free your planet, it all just goes out the window. Because, I mean, that Dukat's character never turns into a good guy. Mm. He always acts like he's going to, and you always think he might.
Maybe that's what they wanted to do. Maybe they wanted to turn his character. Mm. But I couldn't see it. I felt like you did.
Yeah.
So it was my mother who they had a relationship.
That was so awkward too. That episode never happened.
I have to say though that, you know, in terms of this dynamic between the Cardassians and Bajorans, that Second Skin episode was awesome.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and amazingly acted by you.
Thank you.
I thought it was,
thanks.
I thought it was so well done. Is that the guy? Is that Dukat?
No. That's some Cardassian.
I haven't watched all of the shows.
Yeah.
Dukat was, think of the worst people that have walked the planet.
Played by Mark Alamo.
Oh.
Yeah.
And that's.
Oh, ding. Now I get it.
Mark Alamo.
Alamo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Incredible actor.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible actor.
Yeah.
Really great.
And a very interesting human being.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. He's there's a lot going on with him. He's still around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, here's another question though. Regarding the cast, did you all get along?
Yeah.
Did a good dynamic?
Really good. Really good.
You had a lot of people.
we had a lot of people. But it was, I remember one director, you know, when we had an op scene, because we wouldn't see each other for a long time. And then if we had an op scene, we were mostly all together, yeah, except for Armin.
Right.
And it one director was like, you're like a pack of wild dogs. It's like trying to direct a pack of wild dogs. Shut up.
Yeah.
Because we just couldn't stop catching up.
Right. I think something also in watching the episodes, I will say this, the most episodes of Deep Space Nine, it's how I got to, it is my favorite of the Star Trek series, all of them. It's my favorite. I think it's so well written and so well acted. I can't gauge my own show, so I don't even count that one. But
your show is great, Connor.
Thank you. Was waiting. That took, yeah, that took a little long.
Connor, well, you were in a really good show.
I love you in it, and Dominic too. But I've been watching it to watch the women, mm-hmm, in it, and.
But Linda Park was underused in a way that's
hard to
imagine.
It was a little boys' club ish.
Yeah,
it was. There was like, oh, what happened here now?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, that I have to say about it. But my God, there was so much great stuff about it.
Well, I was saying this before you got here that, you know, well, on these cruises, you know, the television, all you get to watch are different, you know, shows of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So that's when I first started watching Deep Space Nine, and then
on a Star Trek cruise.
On a Star Trek cruise,
that's awesome.
And then I've watched a lot of it since then. It requires a certain ability, I think, to be able to speak those lines. There's a certain theatricality to it that, unless you have some amount of training, it's going to swallow you whole.
Yeah, it's goofy if you're not a good actor,
right? And your show was jam-packed with great actors and great writing. I mean, I was also saying earlier we were talking about how, like,
so good.
Depending on the season of our show, there were some clunkers that are just absolutely forgettable. And there must have been some of that on your show, but I've never come across an episode of Deep Space Nine where I was like,
There aren't many. There aren't any. I said this, there are episodes of Deep Space Nine that are some of the best television ever made. I think, personally. There's only one of The Next Generation, maybe two. Also, what your show has, Connor, is, we were talking about this earlier as well, Deep Space Nine had the great writing and the giant cast of great actors. And forgive me, because I know that you're in this club as well, but Enterprise, Trip, and T'Pol, their romance, you two making out on camera, is the first time I didn't look away from the television when I was watching Star Trek romance. It didn't make me cringe. So you should be proud of that, because that is a hard thing to do in Star Trek.
Why do you think that is?
I think because it's such a goofy concept to begin with. Like, you know, the rubber masks and, you know.
Seeing past that.
Yeah, like it's just, there's something in the fantasy of it. It's not quite, it doesn't push it far enough. I don't know.
That's partly it.
It's television, right? It came out of the 60s with the original series with the very low budget. Like, look at this planet of the week. It's like they shot it up here or something.
Yeah.
You know, they threw up rubber rocks and all that. And it's right. Like, it just had that goofy sort of feeling the whole time. But that's also part of the magic of Star Trek.
I think part of it, too, is that the relationships are not really given the amount of time that you would need establish them and make them believable in a way
You
know, maybe stuff that was supposed to happen off camera. I don't know. But, you know, when you have relationships again, like on a crime drama or what have you, it's the whole year or it's the whole show.
Or you're relegated to like a romance of the week.
Right.
Like, and there's a guest character in this episode and that's the romance beginning to end.
Right. Right. And the shows for Star Trek are the ship. That's the star of the show.
Yeah.
And the inhabitants who commingle with one another are just that.
And maybe it's maybe you're kind of getting close to what I was trying to say. Maybe it's that the cast of these Star Trek shows all are kind of family. And when you're a fan of the show, like, they become part of your family. And it's weird to watch family members make out.
That's an interesting
Like, even if it's mom and dad, it's like, why do I have to watch this?
That's why you turn away.
That's why you turn away.
Unless it's Connor.
But not with
Unless
you.
Unless it's Connor. Yeah. When it's Connor, I turn the lights down,
put on some jazz.
A little Chardonnay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't help myself.
What are your favorite episodes?
That's a good question.
Duet. Duet is definitely one of my favorite, and not because I'm heavy in it. It's just me and another actor and slightly everybody else, just a little bit. It was a bottle show. Mm. It was written to save money, and they didn't want to use special effects or, you know, and Harris Yulin plays this Cardassian, and it could easily be a play. Mm. And what it says about bias,
yeah,
and all these interesting issues, and I think the writing is incredible, just incredible.
And the actor, I forget his name, but
Harris Yulin.
Yeah, he's so good in this episode. That's and you guys, your characters become friends. He's trying to. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's trying to confess his crimes, right?
And he wants
to be caught.
He wasn't.
But he wants you to figure it out.
He didn't commit crimes. He wants to take on some of the guilt and be punished for what the Cardassians did.
Right. Yeah.
And he ends up getting killed in the end by a Bajoran who just goes, you know, and it's like, no,
the only
he
good was, Cardassian's a dead Cardassian.
Yeah. And he was actually a good man who felt huge responsibility for what happened, even though he had nothing to do with it. Mm. So it's really very, you know, survivor's guilt, bias, you know, racism, all these interesting elements in this show. And Harris, it was the first time he'd had all that makeup on. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, slam it on and go.
Right.
And then he had pages of dialogue. So you can imagine, he was like, what?
Right.
What? You know, you have to learn the tone of the show, and it's just the nightmare guest star of all time, and he was amazing. He was just amazing.
Wow. Any others?
Yeah, Far Beyond the Stars.
I saw that last night.
That's the, what, the one in the 50s where he's having a fantasy about writing a science fiction?
Yeah.
Or is he?
He meaning Sisko. Or is he?
Or is he, exactly.
Is the entire show, Deep Space Nine, really just that character's imagination?
Right.
Yeah. That was a good episode.
Right.
Or is, and you didn't have to wear the makeup or the prosthetic anyway.
Yeah.
Or is it happening in parallel universes? And
right.
I mean, you know, they addressed all of those things so, so well.
Yeah. And there are more, but those are the two that really stick out to me as, and I love the pilot.
Pilot's great.
I love the pilot.
Yeah. The pilot had no pun intended, no holes in it. It was so good. I look at ours and I'm like, wah,
your wah. First line in Deep Space Nine is you're yelling at some television screen or some viewer screen. You're throwing it all away, all of you. And then you say, and Sisko walks in and you're like, what do you want? I suppose you want the desk. It was like, what a great way to set up your character.
I was allowed to do that. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Women did not. I mean, it's hard to think of it now, but that was not available. Anger at a man who was an authority figure, mm-hmm. not allowed.
Mm. Wow.
Never happened. Never. Unless you were supposed to be a bitch and you were going to be killed soon.
Mm.
But I was a regular character. It was incredible to me.
Did you feel like you were walking a fine line on how to do that at all times?
I did what my truth was and went like this for when people said, oh, she's just a bitch, or that's not the way women are strong. And it was like, excuse me, it is, because this is the way I am.
Right.
When I'm angry, this is the way I am.
Strong enough to tell you to fuck off.
So, right. You know, it's like we're supposed to jump into these boxes for everybody. And, you know, instead of this wide room of however a woman is that woman,
yeah,
you know? So yeah, it was, but I did worry about getting fired.
Oh, God.
But Paramount wasn't watching. They may have if they watched it, but they were, everybody just really very quickly was interested in Voyager.
Because Voyager started how many years after you were in?
I'm not sure. Was it two?
You overlapped with The Next Generation by one or two seasons at the most.
And that's what it was.
One on your own, and then Voyager kicked in.
See, yeah. That's right. They were interested in Next Gen because they were the real stars of Star Trek.
And then those people went on to Voyager.
Yes.
And Deep Space Nine was like the bastard adopted child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What stages did you shoot on?
17, 4.
Oh.
And another one next to 17. But yeah.
Wow. Were you ever told by anyone to reel it in, to rein it in, to do any of that?
Yeah. Rick Berman called me in and said, you're walking like John Wayne.
No.
Really?
You're like, I know.
You're like,
you got it?
Yeah.
But you know, so many years later in La Cage aux Folles, the movie, they do this whole thing about how actually John Wayne moved very much like a woman. So I felt like,
there full you circle.
Go. There you go.
I'm not walking circle. Like John Wayne. He's walking like me.
Funny
Thank
story.
Thank you.
So John Ford told John Wayne that he was walking effeminately in the first thing that he did with him and said, figure something out. So John Wayne invented this walk. And it
the
turns
John Wayne walk?
Yeah.
Wow.
To make it as, I guess, masculine as he thought he could. But again, from what you just said, not as much, you know?
No.
You can take the girl out of the trailer park, but you can't take the swagger out of John Wayne.
There's something there. I'm not sure what. Yeah.
Oh, you're so generous.
Come back at the end of the show with a couple more of those. Maybe we can.
Yeah.
And then it ends.
And then it ends. And I was devastated.
Oh.
Devastated. Oh, it was my community, my flow state, my place in the world. It was everything, and my chance to do a character like that. And I went, I won't get that again. It's going to be going back to playing, you know, someone's wife, someone's dead wife, someone's hysterical wife. I didn't want it. Right. And I was coming out in my 40s. So it was like, well, for sure. I've probably got this much to do the hysterical wife and then I'm done.
Right.
Was my feeling. And I got a call that they were interested in me for Chicago on Broadway. And of course, now we know they just do stunt casting all the time. They're constantly putting someone into that show, but it's still running. So they're pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
All these years later. But that, even though I had my, oh God, do I want to do that? I've got two children and it was one of the best experiences of my life.
Who did you play in Chicago?
I played
Roxy?
Yes.
Okay. I was like, oh shit. Who are the characters?
Oh
in
my
Chicago?
God. Roxy. You see, not one name can I remember right now. I played Roxy Hart, and that was, I mean, you know, anything that is that challenging mm-hmm. is great. It was scary hard. And she carries the show. She must carry the whole show. And for 90 minutes, it's short, thank God.
Yeah.
But for 90 minutes, you're
a professional athlete.
You are.
Yeah.
And you're projecting. What, so you said that there's a lot of stunt casting with that show.
Now there is.
How many shows were you running a day or a week? Did they lay off of it a little bit because of that? Or were you still punching out two or three of them a day?
Well, no, you mean on Deep Space Nine?
No, on the show.
On Chicago? Yeah. That's 8 shows a week.
A week.
And we did 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday schedule. So, yeah. At the weekends,
not one matinee day, two matinees.
And then it's like
You know, it's like being forced on a Friday on the show.
Yeah.
The weekend doesn't really mean much because you're so wild-eyed. So after Friday night, two Saturday, two Sunday, you get Monday off and you're back on Tuesday. And it's like, that wasn't enough.
No.
That wasn't enough at all.
So being forced on a Friday, for people who don't know, means?
You were meant to have 8 hours from door to door.
You're scheduled to shoot an amount of time.
You're supposed to have.
Right.
And you're not done shooting.
And if you're not done shooting and they need to have you 6 hours later, they do what's called a forced call, which it's supposed to be a request, but this never felt like that before.
No.
I called it a new couch. I mean, every time I got one, I was like, sure, I'll do it.
A new couch.
I felt that way the first 2 years. It was like, oh boy. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Of course.
After the first 2 years, it was like, I would give any amount of money for sleep.
Yeah.
I just need.
Don't pay me for this episode.
Don't. Yeah. Home. I just want to go sleep. Yeah.
Right.
But
I never got them very often. You know, it took me 15 minutes to get makeup on and,
oh yeah.
I just had, you know,
you're human.
Spray gun.
You were just handsome.
They'd already done my hair.
Yeah.
I already had the highlights in my hair.
You are human.
All you had to do was learn your lines in front of everybody.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
The hard thing about Chicago is that I also did another series in Vancouver, did 6 episodes of, I played Madam X on Dark Angel.
Oh.
And going back and forth while doing the show, while having 2 children, and I was separated. So it was like, whoa. There was one night I came back from shooting in Vancouver. They would put all my scenes together in one day so that I could shoot in one day and then I'd come back. And so I would miss maybe one show and they worked it out between them. And then I'd be back and there's a courtroom scene in Chicago where my character has to, and it's all done to a beat. And if the beat is lost, everybody, it's like billiard balls going everywhere. And it's with a whole bunch of people on stage. And I was supposed to stand up and go, oh, Fred Casely. And that goes on. But like today with names, I stood up and went, oh, look at that light on me. And I stood there.
Oh, you just went blank.
And all the chorus performers behind me were going, Fred Casely.
Oh, God.
And I couldn't hear them. It was like, where am I? Am I in Vancouver? Am I on the stage of Broadway? Where am I? And the poor actor playing Fred Casely, who had the next thing. I'm like, oh, Fred Casely. And he's got this whole thing. But instead of saying his lines, he just went, in a valiant attempt to get us back on the beat.
Right.
And we never quite made it. It was horrific.
So wait, you would do, you'd have 2 shows on a Sunday and then you'd take an overnight flight to Vancouver. You'd pack in 14 pages or 16 pages, a lot of dialogue, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Fly back home the next day, mm-hmm. morning,
mm-hmm.
and do a show.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
You get the medal.
Yeah.
Why did you do that to yourself?
Because
you got work.
It's the opportunity and I'm in my 40s and my time's about up, you know?
Right.
So, oh my God. And Madam X was yet another part that was written for a man. Hmm. And they went, hey, why don't we get Nana? And it was like, yep. Yes, I want to do that.
Right.
Yes, I want to be a badass.
Yeah.
It was great. So it was great.
You've touched on this a little bit, and I wonder if it's still the same, but, you know, one of the sad parts about this business and women in this business, actors in this business, is that you get put out to pasture. It happens, doesn't happen to men nearly like it happens to women. You felt that was sort of an imminent wall that was coming quickly.
Oh, yeah. I heard the clock ticking.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was just like, it's not like my time is up to play interesting roles. It was my time is up to play.
Right.
I just won't get invited to the party anymore.
Right.
And going silver is almost a political act for me. It's like, I know what this does. And yet I just, it's like, no, this is when I'm called to do grandmother roles and they go, no, you're not what we have in mind. I'm like, why? Why not? This, I am a grandmother.
I'm a badass grandma.
I'm a grandmother. Yeah, I can be a killer grandma. We won't talk about that project.
Killer grandma.
Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
But then it doesn't quite happen. You don't get put out to pasture. You get wildfire.
I got wildfire. I kept working, which was remarkable. And I got off the hamster wheel.
Heading out to New Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what did me in. And stayed and went, I like this life. Mm. And maybe I can work and fly and no. They went, oh, Nana visitor. She died in New Mexico.
She's in New Mexico.
Right. No, she died. So
newsflash.
So I was gone. And in terms of agents and all of that, it was like, you're gone, you know?
Right.
And I knew that would happen. I knew it, but it does. It does. I still work. I still work.
Well, I don't think actors really retire.
Mm-mm. No.
I mean, I don't think we can.
No. And I'm looking to, you know, have some longevity and get those 80-year-old roles, you know?
They're there.
Yeah. I remember playing 30. I was supposed to have a 24-year-old son in one project. And he was actually 4 years younger than me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But that's the way it was. Women, they got really young women to play older women.
Right. And for guys, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
You're older than the part you're like what TV and movie world thinks is a 60-year-old man or a 53-year-old man.
Yeah.
It's not me. You know, if a guy in his 50s, they're going to go for somebody who's probably closer to 60. It's a flip. It's strange.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So I have found that like if there's a role that says early 50s.
You think that they think you're too young.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's been my experience.
Yeah. Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
If you're 20 in the show, they're going to cast a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking 20 years ago of what that age looked like.
Right. Right.
And for a grandmother too, this is the truth.
Right.
Of being a grandmother.
Right. I mean, yeah, they're square peg round hole thing. I mean, that's why, you know, hence the a little bit of the white.
I
mean,
I like the beard. I like the white. It reminds me of me.
Yeah. It's just that I have to sleep with it.
I like it too.
Anyway,
I figured out how to not sleep with mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just put it on the nightstand?
Put it on the nightstand. I hand it off to my butler who stores it in my beard.
Gives you a clean shave and then attaches it in the morning.
Yeah.
How about we get to some questions?
Oh, we have a pile of fan questions.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. So Mars from Patreon asks, what's the strangest thing you've had to do in your acting career?
Spend an entire year, it seemed, in a round bed. I was in the soap opera, The Doctors. Okay. And I was, the love interest of one of the hot doctors on it. And it felt like an entire lifetime in this round bed of his.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You never got out of it?
No. And I was a doctor too, I think. But I was I was always in the bed.
To your doctor's bedroom. Dr. Nana in her pajamas in the round bed.
It sounds like a cold.
Yeah. What did the doctor say?
Wow. Was he usually there with you?
Medication for you.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It was a soap opera.
Yeah.
My prescription for you is a round bed.
Did you like doing them?
Soaps? Yes. It was like being a business person, but being an actor. It was like in at work at the same time, out at work at the same
time.
Done
by 7 or 8.
Yeah. You know, learn these lines, do it. It was just so, you know, in the same space every day.
Would you shoot like 3 episodes in a day?
No, an episode a day.
One a day?
Good Lord.
Because I've got a friend who's on one now and...
3 a day?
Well, maybe not 3, but they'll do more than one.
Wow.
You know, especially if it's particularly character heavy for a specific actor, they'll block it and do...
Oh, yes.
Sort of the 3 episodes for that. I mean, it's 80, 90 pages.
Yeah.
You know, imagine.
Yeah.
Well, it's had a hard time with 8.5.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's different. It is different. Once you've done it for a while, you know what you're going to say or a version
really?
Of it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you get it. You get all the relationships and what you usually say to this one. And it's usually a variation. I mean, that's the way it was back then.
And as long as you got close enough.
Yeah, close enough.
Right.
You keep going.
Right.
We did the doctors. And I remember we were on the set of the hospital and my doctor, my lover, got in a fight with another and they had a fist fight and the wall, they hit the wall and the wall was going like,
wobbly.
It's okay. Keep going. It's like,
they'll never notice it.
They won't notice.
That's awesome. Now that's quality entertainment.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's what we strive for here on the Shuttle
All right. Show. Scott Lakes from Patreon asks, if you could go back and give yourself some advice on the first day of shooting DS9, what would it be?
Trust yourself and breathe. And by breathing, I mean, be inside your body. Don't be out where the director is looking at you. Don't be, you know, worried about is the cameraman getting, be inside your body.
I like that. I have a question. Have you done coaching?
I have, and I love it. Yeah. I love teaching actors, young actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Are you looking for a coach?
Well, no, it just sounds like she would be a great coach, so I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think yeah, there's maybe. So much
maybe.
That
maybe
comes...
You can coach me.
There's so
coach
much me. That comes with acting yeah. that is about experience and about finding, once you've done it for so many years... You find ways to not hurt yourself. And I think those are the best things to teach young actors. Yeah. How not to get in your own way. How not to bring it home with you.
Yeah.
And how not to have a trauma hangover.
Did you
That's a real thing.
Have any particular sort of style of training? Say, did you work with Meisner? Mm-hmm. Did you do Adler? Yeah, I didn't either. My rule book is actually a pamphlet on acting, which is Jimmy Cagney is hit your mark, open your face, and tell the truth. However you have, wherever you need to, whatever it takes to get there, that's your job.
Right.
But those are the things that you're supposed to do.
That's really interesting.
Right.
I thought you were going to say that I went to the school of being naturally talented.
I went to the school of the gift.
I'm so gifted. I am the gift. Did you see my body?
Okay. Stephanie K from Patreon asks, I really enjoyed your performance on the episode of Night Court that you did, basically playing a different character every line. What was it like working with the cast?
You know what? They were, most of them were not easy.
Really?
Yeah. They had done the show a lot. I don't know what was going on, how they were being treated. But that was the show that I went, if I'm ever on a show, I'm going to make sure a guest star feels welcome. Mm. And, you know.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's so easy. It's so easy to lose sight of being human. And they were big stars. Mm.
That was huge when it was on.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Larroquette was lovely and he was lovely to work with. He was kind. But for the most part, it was tough.
Interesting. Great.
Yeah. Wow.
Do you think that some of them didn't want you to steal any of their thunder? I've experienced that myself where if you walk in and this happened to me a couple of times where you walk in, I try to walk in as, you know, I know it's stone cold. I'm prepared. I've made choices and I own my space.
You walk in as the answer.
Well, that's, we've talked about this a few times, you know, you walk in is the answer and you feel that and you believe that. And then you get the energy from other people that, you know, sort of side eye looks or just things that don't make you feel at home in a place where you're supposed to be open and honest and
don't upstage me. This is my house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who is like that?
Who?
I'm really going to break your heart.
Oh, uh-oh.
Yeah. And this is my experience and my experience only of him, Andy Griffith.
Oh, my heart. Oh, really?
I did three of those.
The Matlocks?
Matlocks.
Oh, Matlock.
Yeah.
And he was...
Mayberry. Yeah, you were 11.
Tough.
Was he?
He was very tough. He had an issue with me. Maybe he didn't like what I did and I kept coming back like a bad penny. I'd turn up.
Right.
You know, that could have been like, what can I do to get rid of this one?
Right.
I don't know. But he
did you park in his spot?
Yeah, no. I swear to God, nothing like that. But he made working really, really tough.
Oh, that's really disappointing. Especially for my friend Mike McCall, who... That's his hero.
Yep. Doesn't change what he did on camera.
No.
It was amazing.
It also doesn't change the fact that he was the one who gave us residuals.
Is that right?
Yep. Yep.
Matlock?
It was on Andy Griffith, I believe. He demanded that, you know, when there were reruns, that people were getting paid for the work they'd done. And,
thank God for him.
He got it through. But he's an asshole.
Sometimes all you need is an asshole on your side.
But to go back to Stephanie's question, the Reinhold Wiggy was the executive producer of that show. And can you believe all the names I can't think of? Reinhold Wiggy. Right. Comes like, it's like.
Just slipped right,
right
then,
there.
And then Roxy.
And then Roxy. I'm like, what? What was that character I played for years? He was a lovely man, and I ended up doing a pilot for him after that show. Oh, cool. But it was fun. It was a fun character to play.
Very cool. Okay, next question. Lee Disson and Melissa and a few others.
It's Melissa.
Oh, great. Lee Disson and Melissa and a few others are asking, in body parts, you touch your pregnant belly, look at Bashir and say, this is all your fault. By now, we all know you were having a baby with Sid. How many takes did you shoot and how did you go through it without cracking yourselves up?
Yeah, I think that was like a really early Easter egg ever. Like one of the first that something is said for the audience to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we did more than one take of it.
Oh, well.
I don't think we did. I think it was just the one and it was... you know, and Sid is English, so he's going to be chill about all of it anyway.
Right.
So he wasn't going to like catch my eye and start laughing. He's always, you know. So, yeah. But it was a fun inside joke to do.
Yeah. All right. Nancy Congdon from Patreon.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
What is the genesis of your stage name, Visitor?
Uh-oh.
Nancy, all right, I'll tell you the truth. And it's going to sound like a story, but this is the truth. I said, you know, when I was younger, it was like, oh God, I can't tell this story. So yeah, it was in my family. It was an old family name. I don't think anyone has the name Visitor. Okay, so my elder brother, who's no longer with us, was named Paris. And he had this predilection of naming people. And he was this, you know, my family's full of mythical creatures. Very interesting. His story in itself is a book. But one of the other things he did, besides all the war dog stuff, was he named people. And so I said, Paris, because I went by Nana when I was a chorus girl. And it, you know, it got to be an issue and you can't get a social security card with it, just so I'd be Nana Nana, and I didn't want that, and it was too close to Nanu Nanu, and it's like, so all right, so what do I do? I said, Paris, give me a name. He said, I'll write a name on a piece of paper,
But if you take the piece of paper, you have got to use the name. And I said, but if I hate the name, I can't use it. You've got to use the name. And he said, I'll tell you, I do see you signing lots of autographs if you take this name. You'll sign this name a lot. And so being, I don't know, how old was I, 20? Something like that. I went, okay. And I opened it. It was like, and Nana is, of course, Nana is my name.
Your name.
But yeah. Visitor was the thing that he gave me. And I was like, no.
What?
And like a good little sister, I kept the deal.
Oh,
did he explain why?
There was no like consequence. If
no, he was just being, you know, he was being weird. I don't know. He was, you know,
that is a good story.
Okay. It is a great name.
It is a great name.
And it doesn't sound like a real story, right? That's why I don't, I didn't used to say it, but that's the truth.
Were you ever,
I'm sorry. I don't want to move on. Are you saying that you have like a canned bullshit story that you tell people at conventions?
I used to say.
It's an old family name?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Just to get past it.
I love it.
Because yeah. Who's going to, I'm going to sit down and say that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, who believes that?
That's
the piece
way
of paper,
more interesting.
The piece of paper and that I did it and that I kept it. It's all kind of crazy.
Do you still have it?
No.
Oh, that's sad.
No. Are you saying this is a scoop, then? Are you saying this is the first time?
Oh, you've heard
I've
it here
said
first.
It. This may be the first time film that I've said it, but oh, I wow. have told people the truth.
I was going to ask you, were you ever, who was that guy? Art? He did with Nina. He did the illustrations.
Oh, yeah.
What was his name? Art?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Art Fleischman?
No.
No, Art. You know, all those,
yes.
They were at Sardis.
At Sardis.
Yeah. Did he ever do you?
Yes. Yes. I think for my one and only, I think I'm in there.
Are you?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
You and Picardo, he has one.
Yeah, but I'm like in amongst the chorus.
But you're in it.
But I was in it. That's right. I'm in it. Yep.
Wow. Are you not in it, Connor?
No, I think by the time anybody would have noticed me, I don't think he was alive anymore. I don't think so. No, I never got one. I am in an episode of an issue of Mad Magazine.
You're also in an episode in
Mad
issue
Magazine.
Of Star Trek Magazine.
What did they do in Mad Magazine?
They did a send up of our pilot episode. My character's name was Drip Tuckus.
Drip.
Why don't we move on to trivia?
You do
There's
some
a lot
trivia?
Of questions.
This
here.
Is going to be terrible. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. I don't expect us to win.
Okay. All right.
But we are playing for someone. It's like, wait, don't
oh,
tell me.
Oh, no. Yes, no. This is the worst. Okay.
Yeah.
I played Password online for Gays in Space, and it was like, I felt sorry for each person that worked with me. It's like, so sorry you're going to lose. Actually, I did okay.
Did you?
Yeah.
You might
so don't
win.
Write me out. Don't write me out yet. Let's see.
Connor's been on the winning team once or twice.
Yeah, but it was dumb guesses the entire time. I just got lucky.
All right.
Well, and the format was a little different. You were asked three questions to my one or something stupid.
Yeah, I mean.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So the way this works.
Yes, to tell her.
So you have to completely ask the questions.
Yes, multiple I have choice. To
multiple choice.
All of,
at the end of that. We say, like, you know, if you have it, you go, no, nah, or I go, Connor. And then usually Mark says it first, but.
Your name, saying your name is the buzzer.
But we get to.
Okay.
We get to confer.
Okay. Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you have to wait until all the multiple
But why would we
are.
Confer?
Because us against him.
Got it. Got
Star
it.
Star Trek people versus me.
Versus Savant.
Savant.
Savant's a good thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, an idiot Savant is not
it,
a good thing.
Is it now? Is it though?
I'm sick of being called that.
Today, Connor and Anna are playing for our Patreon member, Lee Nickel. Hi, Lee.
Yay. Nice. Hi, Lee. Congratulations, Lee.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for everything.
If we win, you get a new car. Good luck.
All right.
Not from us.
From
Unless
somebody.
We get more Patreon.
Right.
We'll get a new car someday.
Right.
Someday. Along,
you might.
It yep. might be that big, but it's a new car.
We'll give you a stage name.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Question number one. Who is Data's brother? A, Dorn. B, Grok. C, Lore or D? Or
Marner.
That's Connor.
That was Connor.
Can I hear those again, please?
Oh, shit.
Yes, for real? Okay. Mm-hmm. A, Dorn. B, Grok. C, Lore. D, Borg.
C?
That's what I think.
C.
Yes!
Woo!
Cheating.
You don't get a new car. Sorry.
Yay for you guys.
Question number two. Which of the following is a Klingon insult? Okay. A, Parmok. B, Dablok. C, Dokta. Or D, Quinaga.
I think it's C. What is C?
I've got no idea.
Dokta.
Yeah.
You're going with C? Do you?
Oh, is that where we're going to go? You're going to go with C?
Dablok?
No.
It's not?
Yes, it is. Sorry. Oh. Yes, it is. B, Dablok. This is a Klingon insult, though the meaning is unclear.
Dablok.
How could it be unclear? How can you not know what that means?
Dablok.
I mean, they've translated the works of Shakespeare.
That's true.
I wonder what
talk
it means.
Bay, talk.
All right. Yeah. Question number three. In the episode Mud's Woman, what was the name of the pill the woman took to stay beautiful?
The beautiful woman.
Nana.
Oh.
Is that wrong?
Just to wait for the questions to be.
Oh yeah. Shoot.
I was going to just give it to you. A, Eve drug. B, Aphrodite drug. C, Venus drug. D, Eros.
Nana.
That was not.
Yeah. Venus drug. Venus.
Venus drug.
Wow.
Woo.
Holy moly.
You guys are doing great. You too. Question number four. What quadrant is home to the founders? A, Delta quadrant. B, Alpha quadrant. C, Beta quadrant. Or D, Gamma quadrant.
Mark. Gamma.
Yes.
Gamma quadrant. Yes, you're correct.
And I do believe it was Mark.
I was looking at you to tell me.
Yeah, I am.
Forgive me, the producer in me just took control of the situation when no one else made a decision.
So we're at a tie.
Okay.
Are we tied?
Is there one more?
Oh,
yes,
God.
There's one more. All right. Who was originally cast as Counselor Deanna Troi? A, Majel Barrett. B, Marina Sirtis. C, Gates McFadden. Or D, Denise Crosby.
Mark.
Okay.
Because I know it.
Was it Mark?
I know it.
I think that was Mark, but I'm choosing Nana just because.
Ah! Oh. Nana.
Well, I know that. I mean, they never shot it that way, but Denise Crosby was originally thought to do the role. And. But what?
No, I'm just watching.
I'm going to say Denise.
Yes, you're right.
That's it.
Answer is Denise Crosby.
They were cast for each other's roles and it swapped in a rehearsal or something.
Right? Really? It was originally cast to play Counselor Troi, and Marina Sirtis was cast as Security Chief Lieutenant Macha Hernandez, but they switched roles during rehearsals.
Yes. Marina Sirtis.
And the Lieutenant Security Marina. Chief's name was changed to Lieutenant Natasha Yar. Interesting.
There you go.
Nice.
We won.
You won.
Hey!
We won.
Hey! Nice.
So that is
now
awesome,
you get
you
to
guys.
Do a promo at the end congratulating Lee for winning for him, I guess.
Sorry, Mark.
That's okay.
He feels defeated.
I'm not a sore loser.
And now we're going to play Stuck on a Deserted Island with Connor Trinneer.
Yeah. Good times.
Handsome Island.
Handsome Island.
You're so handsome.
We're going to make it a series.
Yeah. Connor Trinneer gets stuck on an island filled with Connor Trinneer clones.
That's right.
Oh my God.
And it's about the love triangles that crop up. Ugh.
You are spending the rest of your life on a remote island. And you are allowed four things. You're allowed an author, all of their work. You are allowed a dessert. So for instance, if you pick cookies, you get to have all of the kinds of things.
Okay.
Your musician, all of Beethoven or all of the Stones or whatever. And then your cuisine.
Okay. So. All right. So the author would be Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. The food would be French. The music
French food.
would be...
It's forever.
Oh, and the segment is called Stuck on a Deserted Island with Connor Trinneer.
So you have to live with this, too. Yeah.
I've never read that author, he's so worried. That'll be fantastic. Oh, this is great.
You're worried where you're going to have to live with. Music, music, it would be everything from Chucho Valdez. And what was the other thing?
Dessert.
Pie.
Oh,
ooh, yeah.
We have a pie obsession over here on the sofa.
You guys can come visit.
Okay. Yeah.
From your deserted island. Yeah.
Because it can be everything.
Yeah.
He's going to make you a pie. This one.
Are you good at it?
Mm-hmm. He is.
Pretty good at pie.
Well, I better have an opportunity.
What's your favorite?
From Minnesota. So.
Is that a thing?
It's a thing.
In Minnesota.
Rhubarb doesn't grow everywhere here like it does in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Strawberry rhubarb pie.
It's the heaven on earth dessert for me.
It really is.
Here I'm restricted to blueberry, and pumpkin, and
cherry.
Chocolate.
Apple, cherry. She likes cherry.
I'm the cherry, yeah. What's your favorite?
I think fresh blueberry, although it's not so fun to make because it's too simple because it's not cooked, but oh my god.
And so like your crust, do you want a lattice top? Do you like it open top? Do you want like a crumble crust?
Crust? All of it.
Like a graham.
I want every crust there is.
She's getting three pies.
I want it all.
My favorite pie is key lime pie. I think key lime pie really? Is my favorite.
I love key lime pie.
Are you just saying that because your character in Star Trek was from Florida, or you?
No, he liked pecan pie.
I love pecan pie too. Yeah,
we should
key lime is my least
here.
Favorite.
Is it really?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Oh,
it's not lemon. It's it's
not. It's
doesn't have meringue.
Well, I don't like meringue.
Oh, I love meringue.
Really, that's a thing that I even if I have lemon meringue pie, I take off the meringue.
I think you haven't had good meringue.
Maybe not.
It can be spongy, and what's the point of that? But if it's soft and burnt on top and,
But it doesn't taste like anything.
Oh, it does. Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Like burned.
No. It's meringue is great. Meringue is good.
Well, yeah. I'm not good with that stuff. I'm good with fruits.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I can't stand the jelly pies. You get like jelly pies from the stores, you know, where you buy it and it's basically like apple jelly.
Oh, yeah.
No. They're like blueberry jelly in a crust. Right. Yeah.
Cool. And then, we have a gift for you.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
I love gifts.
Well, this is, Erica asked if you like wine, and I said, I'm sure she does like wine, but... I've been on the cruise with you, and it's a lot of this, which is
constant that. Yes. Constant that.
And it's Casamigos. We're looking for some sponsorship.
I am Blanco. So grateful. Thank you so much. So the best margarita that I know of is half a cup of this. Half a cup of fresh, this is to make two, half a cup of fresh, that's a big, it's still a big one actually. So half a cup of tequila, half a cup of lime juice, a quarter cup of orange liqueur, and that's it.
Sounds like a lot of ingredients.
You ever had ranch water?
Yes.
No, what is ranch water?
Ranch water is tequila, club soda, and lime juice. And it is, I love it.
Yep. That's when I'm too lazy to squeeze a lot of lime juice, that's what I'll have.
Really?
Yeah. Ranch water. It's and really good.
A lot of people don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Very refreshing.
Mm-hmm. And you can have, it's a bigger drink. So if you're just drinking tequila on the rocks with lime, you're going to make it through more of the night.
More. Are you suggesting I do that on the cruise this year? Maybe. Get into a little less trouble.
When in Rome.
You know, they told us on the first day of the cruise, and I get sick. I get motion sickness. Oh, they said the best thing to do is eat and drink a little bit all day. And they meant a little alcohol. And so I went, okay. And it does. It works.
Just following the rules.
It
what
works.
A wonderful. Now I'm going to go on cruises all the time.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Just going to live on a boat. So thank you. Drink all day.
Thank you so much for this. I will put it to good use. Promise.
You're welcome.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are very grateful that you came to spend time with us.
Today. Yeah.
This so was fun. Yeah. This was really, really fun.
We hope that you'll come back.
Absolutely.
And encourage your friends and colleagues
well,
to come
we
back.
Also, before we go, we want to talk about your book.
Oh, yeah.
The book that you're doing right now. You want to let everybody know what's going on?
Yeah, it's the book that just because of COVID, it's been delayed and delayed, and I need to talk to all the women on the shows that are active now, and I've had to wait because of COVID restrictions. But once I can do that, it's been so interesting. It's been a real journey for me. I know they say it's supposed to be, and I thought, yeah, right. I'll learn some stuff, but it's shifted me to really study the 60s, to look at the show back then and what it was doing, to speak to the people that were touched by it or changed by it or inspired by it to, you know.
Mudd's Women. That's how you knew that answer so fast.
That's how I knew. I'm gonna get good at this stuff. Yeah. But it's been fascinating, and I'm enjoying the process. And I'm down in my office, which is right next to the garage. It's this tiny little spider hole. And I'm in the world of Star Trek and so many remarkable people who've watched the show and who were behind the scenes or on camera. It's a lot of remarkable people.
And influenced by it. And
I talked to Samantha Cristoforetti, Commander Cristoforetti, who is in command of the International Space Station right now. And before she went up, she came to my house to be interviewed.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to the ESA in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to her while she was in space.
Oh,
wow.
And the woman who was organizing it said, okay, open a channel. And my mind went, because I'd said those words a million times,
right.
open a channel. And yet here was this young woman who had watched the show, who got inspiration from it, really on a space station. And I'm down on Earth, and my mind just ricocheted a million different ways. And that's the name of the book now, Open a Channel. And it's about opening channels of communication with women. That's, you know, when I look back at the 60s, 70s, 80s, those were the issues that became up. That's what became a problem for women they didn't continue talking to each other. You know, we can get distracted with thinking of self so much, or distracted with other issues, and we forget to communicate and share our stories and share our experiences. So that's what I've been doing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Cool. And what a great story.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, let me tell you one thing. So she's, I know I'm going over here, but Samantha.
Oh shit, you can sit here all day.
Yeah.
Samantha is a fighter pilot, an engineer. She was going up to the space. She's an astronaut. She has two children under 5.
Oh, I was going to say, but she's also got the hardest job in the world, right? Being a mother.
Wow.
Now, I'm not going to say that because I was like, you know, and I've learned this, and I'm in the middle of the interview, and I'm like, Samantha, and you're going up in a couple of weeks. Your husband obviously helps you with the children. And she looked at me and she said, he doesn't help me. They're his children. And that was like a mic drop moment for me. It was like, yeah, that's right. Oh my gosh. And now I don't ask my husband to help me in the kitchen to clean
up.
He
just helps.
It's like, let's both do 20 minutes in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, or he says it,
But we had a big discussion, my husband and I, about it. And he was like, oh my God, that's right. Well, why is it just assumed that it's your job and you get help with it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a big mind shift. Yeah. It's just a word, but it's a big word.
I love that.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is really awesome.
Yeah. So just that moment changed my life.
Maybe you can help me with the dishes from time to time now.
I'm pretty sure I just cleaned the whole kitchen yesterday. Well, we take turns doing things, right?
Yeah. Whatever you say.
I'm staying quiet to see how this develops. Yeah. Right. Get real interesting.
She's fantastic, and we share everything.
No, I saw your YouTube video, Women in Star Trek. I don't know if it was a promo. I was watching it on the way here, but it looked really cool.
Thank you.
It was well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And with that, we just want to thank you so much for coming on our show. It's been fantastic talking to you.
It's been wonderful. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet.
Can't wait to read the book.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. We're off.
Bye, pants.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Very, very
cool.
Much.
Cool.
Yeah. We're good.
Yeah. My pleasure. Like, subscribe, and join us on Patreon.